You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout. Welcome to episode 41 of the podcast, another edition of the first quarter, your 12-minute coaching helper. I'm your host, Dan Jonker. This latest craziness with James Harden's scoring numbers has us thinking, what's the best way to coach a team with a dominant player and still ensure that the other players are developing their skills, getting better, and enjoying the game? Let's get straight to the conversation with myself and my brothers Brian and Brady, and you can follow along at coachcallstimeout.com/41.
I think in general, if someone's that much better than everybody else, a natural flow of an offense, he's still going to end up with more opportunities than everybody else, but at least the others are still involved. I mean, in the Harden case, it's a deliberate choice through the team and the coaching staff to say, hey, this is our best chance of winning right now, is to give this guy the ball and essentially play one-on-one with everybody else based on the perimeter. It's terrible to watch.
It's turned four people into role players. You got two guys standing in the corner. All they focus on is hitting that corner three. You got the big guys just rebounding. It's just four role players. It's boring to watch.
Oh, it's the worst. and it's the worst kind of. I mean, everybody's, the three-pointers wrecking basketball, and now all the kids want to do is shoot threes and this and that. Well, if you thought that was bad, wait till this one starts catching on, because it'd be the worst kind of basketball. Like you said, you'll have four guys standing around and basically being told they're role players right from day one, while the best guy basically plays one-on-one. I hope that doesn't catch on. Oh, my God, I hope that doesn't catch on.
Yeah, it's even worse because they're winning now, and they weren't before.
Well, and the reality is, too, at the youth levels, especially at the lower levels where the fair play rules are in place and there's closely guarded rules and all that other kind of stuff. I mean, if you had a dominant player, you could do this. I mean, it's not inconceivable that you'd win a lot of games if you have one really good guy and tell the other four people to go stand in a corner so their men had to go stand with them. I mean, it's terrible. So if this catches on, it'll be the worst kind of copycat basketball.
Okay, so you're a coach with good intentions. Brady, how do you ensure that those four players don't just get better at one skill? They get better at everything, and it helps for the next level.
I guess it leads back to working on your fundamentals in practice and making sure that you're not just scrimmaging and letting that one person kind of take over practice as well as games. You have to continue to develop your other players around them and make sure that everybody stays involved. I guess the real problem, especially with the younger ages, is there is usually that one kid who stands out. Maybe he's a little bigger, a little quicker, a little faster. But a lot of players don't start developing into really good basketball players until they're 14 years old, 15 years old, and some people don't pick up a basketball till they're 12 or 13. And there's lots of examples out there of professionals who didn't start playing till they were much older. And there's lots of examples of, there's a kid right now in high school in the States who's been all over YouTube since he was 12 because he's been playing high school basketball since he was 11. Well, that kid's like 5'6". He's not even going to get a Division I scholarship now, and he was all the rage. So, there's so many factors, and coaches have to try to remember, especially at the youth level, that, that kid who you think's the fifth best player on the team, he could be your best player in 2 or 3 years if you give everybody an opportunity and just try to build the team.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've all played with people who are, 6 foot tall at the fifth grade, and by the 11th grade, they're still 6 feet tall, and they're totally different skill set involved now, and they don't know how to dribble because they didn't need to in the fifth grade when they were the tallest. You still need to develop the skills of even the best player, work on their weaknesses. But sometimes I think that maybe it's best if you're scrimmaging, put that great player with the bench players and let the other four with another bench player, let those five get to play together and actually, touch the ball and gain some confidence and see what you can do after that.
Yeah, there's a fine line in there, but I agree. You got to find unique strategies to to try and develop everybody. Brady's point about fundamentals, I mean, we preach that all the time, but that's the reality is, if you want to improve your entire team, that you need to be spending more time on fundamentals than on worrying about winning games. And the irony in it is that you'll ultimately win more games because of it. So systems like the Houston Rockets right now, if you want to call that a system, aren't necessarily things I think should be focused on at the youth levels.
Yeah, it's grown men. You can't be teaching one-on-one step back threes and all that kind of nonsense at, you know, fourth, fifth grades. They're not strong enough. They're not able to do that kind of stuff. It just kills the skill development.
And a perfect example for a team like the Rockets, if you're comparing it to youth level, they've got guys that are out injured right now, like Chris Paul. And when he comes back, he's not going to be okay with just standing there letting James Harden try to score 60 points. He's not going to let that happen. And it's the same with youth. You're going to have a kid who develops and gets better, and he's eventually going to be like, no, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to just stand here while this guy plays. I'm good enough to have the ball. And if you just preach, give it to one guy and go, you're going to have a lot of unhappy players, especially when they start to develop and get a little better.
Okay, let's talk about that. Morale. Those other four players, how do you keep the morale high? How do you keep the confidence high? How do you make sure that they're still excited to come and play every day?
What do you mean, if you're doing what Houston's doing?
Not with Houston. I mean, it's natural, especially youth basketball at that age. It's natural if one player is dominating. You see it in soccer, I think, a little more because one kid seems to be way faster than the others and can score 10 goals a game. But in basketball, it's similar, I guess, too. Whoever can dribble the best seems to be the one that dominates. But how do you keep the other four engaged and happy and confident, knowing that maybe they're not going to score more than 2 points in the game?
Well, it comes back to communication, right? If you're building relationships and communicating with all the guys, I mean, those things are things you're building and talking about on a regular basis every day. Developing roles, communicating those roles, having people buy into those roles. I mean, ultimately, what you want is the success of the team to be what everybody's goal is. And, you know, if some guy happens to be a better player, the kids all know who the better player is. And they'll share in his success if he's also sharing in theirs.
The communication side of things needs to be more directed at the best player to ensure that that player knows, boy or girl, knows that he or she needs to keep everyone involved for this team to be operating at its best.
I agree, but I still think the communication is with everybody. But you're right, the best player does need to recognize some of the things that potentially could be perceived as positive or negative with the rest of the group.
Something that comes into play too is a coach needs to be aware of the situation. I think a lot of times, I know myself, on a lot of the teams I played on, coaches favorited their one or two guys. And sometimes those players aren't the best player, or they've just been the best player since they were 10, and now they really aren't. And the coach just continues to play favoritism and doesn't communicate with the other players. And when they start to get a little older and they've played together for 3 or 4 years, that's when you start to have a lot of turmoil inside the team, because, you know, players are developing, but the coaches aren't developing with the players. They're just, you know, sticking to what they've known for 4 or 5 years, and they're not willing to, you know, play the guy who was the 8th best player over the guy who used to be the 2nd best player. There's a lot of coaches that just, they really struggle to see past what it used to be and don't change the way they're coaching as their players develop. And it holds a lot of players back.
Okay, so we got about 30 seconds before we finish this off. Brian and Brady, what are your top 2 things that you would focus on as a coach if you had a super dominant player?
One would be have some kind of motion offense that forces everybody to be involved. But at the same time, have a couple of sets maybe for that person so that every once in a while you're able to draw on them and use them if necessary. But throughout the game, everybody is still getting opportunities. And then the second thing I would say is a constant communication on a daily basis with roles. And when it comes to your better person, I think you have to make sure they understand that as the better player, there comes greater responsibility. And part of that responsibility is to have your teammates engaged and involved to make them a better group.
Especially defensively. If they're not engaged, your best player can't guard all five players. So you got to keep everybody engaged. Brady, what are your top two?
I guess one is fundamentals and same as communication. Without those two things, your other players aren't going to develop and they're not going to be happy. And that's the most important thing. You can only play, it's 5-on-5 at the end of the day. You can't win with just one player.
I agree. Communication's number one for me. Make sure everybody knows where they stand. And number two, set small goals for those other four players. Grab 10 rebounds. Dive for 3 loose balls. Keep things at goals that they're attainable and help the team and make them feel good. Let's keep the conversation going. I'd love to hear what you focus on to ensure your dominant player isn't the only focus on your team. You can reach us on Twitter. Our handle is @CoachCallsTime. Or you can go to the show notes for this episode, coachcallstimeout.com/41, and leave a comment. If you like what you heard today, please share it with another coach. And while you're at it, let them know about coachcallstimeout.com. We have over 200 free plays, drills, practice plans, and tips for coaches of all ages and skill levels. No registrations, no logins, just get right to it. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.